Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, March 26th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The deputy sheriff raids the offices of a local news agency, The Source, an affiliate of Thomson Reuters news agency, over two stories involving telecommunications giant Econet Wireless.
Government and even other private organizations who deem themselves powerful actually interfering with these freedoms and liberties. So it doesn't come as a surprise because the state is on record actually of raiding newspapers.
The Chinese government dispatches its defense minister to Zimbabwe as Harare openly displays its nervousness over alleged moves by the MDCT to call for mass protests.
The defense industry, as well as their own direct investment in the country. And there is no intention of letting their influence in Zimbabwe dissipate or let alone not be recognized globally.
And more money is raised in efforts to repatriate the bodies of two Zimbabwean students who died in America this week. The deputy sheriff today raided the offices of a local news agency, The Source, an affiliate of Thomson Reuters news agency, over two stories that involve telecommunications giant Econet Wireless, seeking information that the mobile phone giant says is confidential and has a bearing on its internal private and commercial arrangements. Ivan Chifera has details.
This is the commotion that took place today as the sheriff in the company of Econet lawyers, the police and officials from Stewart Bank, among others, ransacked the Source's offices in the capital. The raid on the news agents relates to two published stories in which Econet Wireless is alleged to have extended a $30 million loan to the government, and the other about businessman Philip Chiangwa using land to pay off a $2.1 million Econet Stewart Bank debt. The swap follows a ruling on 16 March by High Court Justice Musakwa granting a provisional order stopping the Source from publishing or republishing information relating to Econet Stewart Bank and its customers, including details of their loan or credits agreements. Chris Mike represents the Source News Agency. He says Econet used the High Court order to raid and search the news agents' offices.
Paragraph 4 of the provisional order specifies that the applicants, together with their lawyers and with the assistance of the sheriff and the ZRP, may search the premises, the entire premises, and computer systems of the respondents. While they were conducting the search, we were obviously concerned with the sort of access they had to certain information that we believe had nothing to do with the order. But details of that particular complaint will be presented to the High Court for a proper determination by the judges.
Econet, which has celebrated rights lawyer Beatrice Mtetwa as one of its attorneys, says the information used by the Source is confidential and has a bearing on its internal private and commercial arrangements. Mike said he is waiting for a ruling on an agent application he made last week seeking the referral of the matter to higher courts, seeking the protection of sources and media rights. This raid provoked anger within the Zimbabwean media and human rights defenders, who are charging that Econet is now colluding with the government to intimidate the media. Secretary General Foster Dongozi of the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists says Econet and Stewart Bank had, in his words, trampled on journalists' rights and urinated on press freedom.
This is a very sad day for democracy. This is a very sad day for freedom of expression. This is a very sad moment for access to information, particularly given the fact that we are only a month and some days before we commemorate World Press Freedom Day.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe National Chairperson Kumbirai Mafunda said the raid violates media freedom, which is guaranteed by the Constitution.
What worries us is that the whole raid is to find a source to a story which was written by the source, and we believe that journalists are protected from revealing their sources, and they should be protected from revealing their sources. We don't support such actions of raiding media houses in order to stifle freedom of expression, freedom of the media. That is really a concern to us as Mr. Zimbabwe.
Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, hardly a friend of the media himself, tweeted against the raid this afternoon, saying it was very concerning. He added in his words that some big person was trying to hide a big stink. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. For analysis, reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached political commentator Chamunoro Amadiridze, who says the raid underscores the death of freedoms in Zimbabwe.
Freedom of the press has been a major issue. It has been a major issue even during critical moments of the country, whereby we are heading for elections, during elections, after elections, and even during peacetime like this, we see the government and even other private organizations who deem themselves powerful actually interfering with these freedoms and liberties. So it doesn't come as a surprise, because the state is on record actually of raiding newspapers, of raiding the daily news, of raiding even journalists and abducting them. We have a fresh case of Ite Zamara, who is missing at the moment.
And some might argue that this has nothing to do with the Zimbabwean government, because Econet is a private company. How would you respond to that?
It depends with the kind of perception that one has with regards to government activities or government institutions. Because as to my knowledge, the Steward Bank and Econet are actually using a court order, meaning the judiciary sanctioned that raid that they have made. And we are seeing also the hand of the deputy sheriff. So we cannot say the government is not in it. The government is fully behind it and is actually in it. It is in the thick of things.
And that was political commentator Chamunoro Amadiridze on the line from South Africa with Studio 7 reporter Ntungameli Nkomo. The Chinese government has dispatched its defense minister, General Chang Wangquan, to Zimbabwe. But the general is flying into a growing political storm in Harare. The Chinese minister, whose country has in the past sold arms of war to Zimbabwe, jetted into the country yesterday at a time Harare is jittery about prospects of mass protests in the country. ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Dr. Ignatius Chombo today warned Zimbabweans not to take part in the protests, saying he says are being organized by the MDC to destabilize the country. The official line is that General Chang is in the country to put into effect mega deals signed during President Robert Mugabe's state visit to China last year. Chinese military company Anjin has been engaged in mining diamonds in Chiadzwa in Manicaland in a joint venture with the Zimbabwe National Army. Political scientist Takura Jangaja of the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the visit by the general shows China remains keen on Zimbabwe.
Well, it indicates that the Chinese have a keen eye on Zimbabwe, particularly the defense industry, as well as their own direct investments in the country. And they have no intention of letting their influence in Zimbabwe dissipate or let alone not be recognized globally.
But the official line is that the minister just wants to see the implementation of the so-called mega deals.
Well, the official line is obviously one that wants to make it seem as though they are making tremendous progress on deals. But it should be something that any serious government would be cautious about saying. A minister of defense comes to their own country and tells them how to implement bilateral agreements, trade agreements, which are also civilian and not necessarily just defense-related. So clearly, it's not necessarily being honest on the part of government to say he's here to simply monitor the implementation of deals. It's actually more than that. He's here to demonstrate that China is very serious about Zimbabwe and has a lot of influence on central government.
But talking about Zimbabwe's military itself, it has been under sanctions for a long time from the West and America. How strong is the force?
I think our own military is very well respected in the region. But the impression given in this visit is that we are highly dependent on China for aid or even investment. And that is not a good thing where a state or a country puts all of its eggs in one basket. The key thing is we must have a plethora of investors who are not necessarily only from the East.
That was political scientist Takura Jangaja speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. More than $42,000 has so far been raised on a crowdfunding application for two Zimbabweans who died a few days ago here in America. Thanks to the internet-driven app youcaring.com, the fundraising team raising money for the repatriation of the bodies of former United States Students Achievers Program graduates Nancy Tinoza and Molin Tariro Magoronga says the response is overwhelming. Over $17,000 has been raised for Tinoza and about $25,000 for Magoronga. But not much has been raised for former ZBC, ZTV actor and KidsNet presenter Susan Muroiwa, who died of cardiac arrest last Friday in Savannah, Georgia, here in the USA. Her daughter, Chiwoniso Mpofu, explains to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube how they've been trying to raise money through another internet application, GoFund.com.
So far, I checked in the morning, there was, I think, 1,600 in the last 4 days. My sister's at home, they're trying to see what they can do, but I don't know how much they'll be able to come up with.
How much money in all do you need to actually repatriate the body of your mother?
For my mom only, without my ticket, it's about $9,000 because the quotation was 8,800 something, so it's about 9,000.
Since you are facing these challenges of raising money, so what next?
The last resort will be to bury her here, but with the way things are at home, who she was, a preacher too, it's like they tell me 400 or so people are gathered at home. They come and go. So I'd feel bad. I'd keep on trying.
That was Chiwonise Mpofu speaking with Studio 7 from Savannah, Georgia, USA. She can be reached at this number, 1-912-856-3076. That number again, 1-912-856-3076. More than 200,000 families have benefited from the free crowdfunding app youcaring.com since its inception in 2009. Head of Communications Leonard Lee says this application is effective in raising funds for families and friends living in different continents.
YouCaring provides free crowdfunding for individuals or families who are seeking to raise money for personal needs. Such as medical expenses, funerals and memorials, tuitions, adoptions and family needs, or as you referenced in your story, it can even be helped for families who are reaching unfortunate situations, such as the death of a loved one, and whether it's funeral expenses, repatriation expenses, or anything of that nature.
How effective is it to raise money, taking into account that maybe some people don't have access to the internet?
Exactly, and that's a very good point. Crowdfunding can be very effective in some cases. In the cases of the two families that were mentioned in the VOA story, it worked very well for them. They were able to collectively raise more than $40,000 in less than 48 hours to enable them to repatriate their loved ones back to Zimbabwe. And so that's an excellent example of how crowdfunding can work. But it works best in situations where not only do families have access to the internet, but also where they have effective social networks, where they have many friends and family who are on Facebook or on Twitter or on the internet or can at least be contacted by email through the internet. UCaring has been in operation since 2009. And since that time, we have helped families around the world raise more than $200 million for their personal and family needs.
And that was YouCaring.com Head of Communications Leonard Lee speaking with Studio 7 from San Francisco, California, USA. And internet communications expert Jerry Dumani says such websites can be enhanced through text messaging.
Almost every Kenyan has some kind of what we call a virtual M-Pesa wallet. This is an SMS-driven technology. If you bring it down to wanting to unilaterally, you know, deploy a Kickstarter version or UCaring version that would use SMS, I think that would make sense. Ultimately, all you're doing is adopting the same interface, bring it down to an SMS level whereby everybody can then be included. Part of the problem right now with internet is that we are leaving some people outside.
How long would it take for this kind of technology that you're talking about to reach those people that are out of the loop?
I think the transition is already in place. It's a matter of time. Right now, you know, if we look at the people behind UCaring and Kickstarter, the reason why they predominantly have these platforms over the internet is because they started in markets where internet and app technology is readily available. They don't necessarily build them for the communities that are probably need the services most, which are probably in emerging markets, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria. But if the technologies were being built from the emerging markets, then the builders of these processes would factor what's readily available. So part of the problem here is you know, the leapfrogging, you know, an aspect of things whereby we build things from, you know, well-developed markets, and we hope and assume that they'll fit very well in markets that probably may not have a well-connected backhauling infrastructure for the internet.
That was internet communications expert Jerry Dumani speaking with Studio 7 from Massachusetts right here in the USA. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C., and we are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940, and 15455 shortwave frequencies. Let's take a look at regional and international news. The Al Jazeera News Organization says Nigerian forces have held two of its journalists in custody since Tuesday as the country tightens security ahead of Saturday's national election. The Qatar-based cable news network released a statement today demanding the release of the two Nigerian journalists who were working for Al Jazeera when they were detained on Tuesday in Maiduguri, Borno State. A U.S. delegation visited Cuba this week as the two nations continued efforts to restore diplomatic relations broken over 50 years ago. The delegation, led by Daniel Sepulveda, the U.S. State Department's coordinator for international communications, held talks with Cuban officials, led by José Luis Perdomo, the island nation's deputy communications minister. And a French prosecutor today said the co-pilot of the Germanwings passenger jet that crashed in the French Alps this week made a deliberate attempt to destroy the aircraft. Marseille's prosecutor Brice Robin said the co-pilot, 20-year-old Andreas Lubitz, locked the pilot out of the cockpit, leaving himself alone in control of the Airbus A320. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says it is strongly opposed to suggestions that the country's labor laws must be amended to make it easier for industry and commerce to retrench workers. Correspondent Taurai Shaba has more details.
Speaking to Studio 7 in Gweri yesterday, ZCTU President George Nkiwane said it is said that the government is seeking to amend labor laws, particularly those to do with hiring and firing. He adds that this would leave Zimbabwe's already hard-pressed workers more vulnerable. Nkiwane was reacting to recent statements by Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa that the government plans to trim the civil service to reduce expenditure and to amend labor laws to make it easier for industry and commerce to retrench workers as a way of helping improve viability.
I have never seen a government minister who advocates for the suffering of the same people that he purports to represent. I mean, it's unheard of. If they want to amend labor laws, we know how to do it, and we've been engaging business, we've been engaging government through the relevant ministry.
Industry has been complaining about the high cost of labor as one of the causes of viability problems, but the ZCTU maintains that research has shown that Zimbabwe's workers are among the least paid in the region. Thousands of workers are being retrenched without getting any severance packages as the economy continues to fail. Ngiwane said the government should put in place safety nets that would cater for the welfare of unemployed workers.
The government must pump in millions of dollars, but this is subject to engagement between government, business and labor, so that we come up with the best practice or best relevant form of social intervention so that you cushion your workers who lose employment.
Turning to the proposed retrenchment of government workers, Giwane said this is long overdue, as his organization has always stated that the civil service is bloated.
Because we have so many ghost workers. We know very much, and we have evidence to that effect. And we've been saying this, that if they want, we can provide that evidence. That we have young people, youth out there, who are being paid from the fiscals, but not working for the government.
Labor and economic analyst Prosper Chitambara told Studio 7 over the phone that he also agrees there's need to reduce the number of government workers, as their salaries have remained a drain on the fiscals. Chitambara, however, said Chinamasa's suggestions address the symptoms of the country's economic problems. He says what needs to be addressed are issues of high cost of finance and related business costs. Chitambara said most of Zimbabwe's workers are paid wages that are below the cost of living, so amending labor laws would not do much to nudge the economy towards the much-needed growth. Didmus Dewa, a development studies lecturer with the Zimbabwe Open University, speaking as an independent analyst, said he shares Chitambara's view. Dewa said, while there's need for government to ensure the viability of industry and commerce, this must not be done at the expense of labor, as doing so could result in social upheaval.
I would want to predict that if you frustrate labor, there is going to be an upheaval in Zimbabwe, because the labor will not take it for granted.
The government is being blamed for failing to revive the ailing economy. Observers say things will not change unless the government puts in place credible policies that attract foreign direct investment and guarantee security of property. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shawa.
The newly formed Transform Zimbabwe political party is accusing ZANU-PF of using chiefs and village heads to coerce villagers into voting for the ruling party in tomorrow's parliamentary by-elections that has been boycotted by the MDC. David Roddy, the campaign manager for Transform Zimbabwe candidate Kennard Fungai in the Mount Darwin West constituency by-election, says chiefs and village heads this morning addressed villagers in Ward 8 in Ruani area. The villagers were told to gather tomorrow morning at their village heads' homesteads before going to polling stations to cast their ballots in elections that are being boycotted by both the MDCT and the Renewal MDC. Roddy says the actions of the chiefs are tantamount to intimidation of the voters, adding a report has been made to the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. He, however, tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that his party will not pull out of the by-elections.
In Ward 8 this morning in Mount Garden West, Boaz Matambanazo, a village head, and Chief Noweza, and village head, Madrikanda, summoned all village heads to a ZANU-PF meeting. And at that meeting, they intimidated the traditional leadership into submitting names of all the villagers for the sole purpose of intimidating them. During that meeting, which was addressed by Boaz Matambanazo and Madikanda, the people were actually told that they were given serial numbers from the current electoral process. And we're told that these numbers are the same numbers that have been issued by ZEC, and that the villagers should vote according to the serial numbers they are going to be given and should be arranged in alphabetical order as they come to vote. So they are coming to vote in blocks, and they've been told the time at which they are supposed to come and vote.
Are you going to complain to ZEC about this development?
We have already made our submissions to ZEC, but I'm afraid to say ZEC said that party is just a campaign, or those people were just campaigning, and that ZEC is all the ballot papers in place, and that ZEC has nothing to do. However, we are not going to withdraw from this electoral process. We are going to proceed. We are going to march on. We are going to soldier on. It is no use making complaints outside the fighting ring.
David Roddy is the Transform Zimbabwe campaign manager for Mount Darwin West candidate Kenard Fungai. Studio 7 failed to reach ZANU-PF for the village heads for comment. But for perspective on the by-elections, reporter Tatenda Kumbo turned to ZANU-PF United Kingdom chairman Nick Mangwana and MDCT spokesman Obed Gudu, who says electoral reforms must be implemented first for his party to consider participating in any elections in the country.
I'll give you the case study of Chirumanzu Zimbabwe as the leadership of the MDC. We went through the voter straw that we were given by ZEC. It was in a total shambles. You'd have about 37 people. One was born in 1913, one in 1917, the other one in 1914, and they are all supposed to be staying at some school in Shishavane or somewhere thereabouts. And when we made follow-ups, that school is not in physical existence. So this is just one of the clear instances of the gerrymandering of the voters' role by the ZANU-PF regime.
Mr. Mangwana, your reaction to what Mr. Gutu is saying here?
The Nikuv argument is tired and I think has been exhaustively discussed and discredited. If you have the electorate at heart and they chose your party to represent them, why abandon them now? I think that's the key question from the point of view of the electorate. Because if they say the mandate was given to their party, the mandate was a five-year mandate. Now, this is what they are withdrawing. Isn't that abandoning their people? I mean, that's the question I think Comrade Gutu has to address here. And obviously, the usual flawed judgment in the whole setup. Why are you taking the seven seats that are based on the 2013 election, which you actually say was not free and fair?
Mr. Gutu, your response there.
I can appreciate that my brother Nick, obviously, he doesn't stay in Zim most of the time. So he doesn't maybe appreciate some of these things that are happening on the ground. I would like give him an example of what is happening in Chirumanzu Zimbabwe constituency, where Emmerson Mnangagwa a few weeks ago addressed the rally in support of his wife, who is actually the ZANU-PF candidate, where he actually threatened the villagers there to say, "I was trained to kill." He went ahead to say, "I want to see each and every village head at the front of the queue. And behind you, all your villagers must be queuing. Each and every village head is going to be told which particular polling station you are going to vote at." And he went ahead to say, "If the ZANU-PF candidate loses, then we know who would have made us lose." If that is not clear and unadulterated intimidation, then what is intimidation?
Mr. Mangwana, on that point, the candidates for Transform Zimbabwe and also the NCI are saying that they are facing issues of intimidation coming from ZANU-PF supporters. Can you talk on that issue?
The context in which he's arguing is actually completely different from the way things were said. In any rally, statements will be said which will be probably perceived to be intimidatory. This has nothing to do with the voters' role. This has nothing to do with the electoral act. It's the behavior of party cadres at rallies. Are you not going to participate in any in every election because somebody say something which you think is untoward?
Mr. Gutu, what happens next following the expulsion of MDC renewal team MPs from parliament if the vacant seats are taken by ZANU-PF? There are some who are saying that MDC might be digging their own hole.
Far from it. It is actually a very strategic decision. The National Council of the MDC, the highest decision-making body of the party in between congresses, will be meeting in the next few days to make a decision whether to uphold the Congress resolution that says we shall not participate in any election in Zimbabwe until electoral reforms are carried out, or to amend that resolution, or to completely set it aside.
That there was the MDCT spokesman Obed Gudu. He was speaking together with Nick Mangwana. They spoke. Nick Mangwana is in the UK, and Obed Gutu was speaking from Harare. And please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye and Praxedis Jeremiah will discuss with you on the Women's Forum issues related to early marriages. That brings the show to an end. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.